Hallo, so schön, dass du da bist, hier beim Podcast Happy, Holy and Confident, deinem Podcast fürs Herz und den Verstand. Mein Name ist Laura Marlina Seiler und ich freue mich so sehr, dass du da bist und wir Zeit miteinander verbringen können, denn heute ist im Podcast einer meiner absoluten Lieblingsmenschen zu Gast und mein absoluter Lieblingsautor, der tatsächlich dafür gesorgt hat, dass meine spirituelle Reise damals begonnen hat. Denn es ist Neil Donald Walsh, der Autor von dem Buch Gespräche mit Gott. Und wenn du den Podcast von mir schon länger hörst, dann weißt du, wie wichtig dieses Buch für mich gewesen ist und dass ich vorher mega das Thema mit diesem Titel von dem Buch hatte früher. Und ich immer dachte, nee, das ist so komisch, Gespräche mit Gott und so weiter und so fort. Und irgendwann habe ich es Gott sei Dank gelesen und es hat alles für mich verändert. Und es war wirklich für mich der Beginn meiner eigenen spirituellen Reise, weil dieses Buch mein Konzept von Spiritualität, was ich vorher im Kopf hatte, einmal komplett verändert hat und mir überhaupt die Möglichkeit gegeben hat, mich dafür zu öffnen. Und deswegen freue ich mich natürlich so sehr, dass heute zum zweiten Mal in diesem Podcast Neil Donald Walsh ist. Und wir sprechen in diesem Gespräch über sein neues Buch, The God Solution. Und es geht sehr, sehr viel darum, wie wir die Probleme, die wir heute auf dieser Welt haben, die wir als Gesellschaft haben, wie wir die auflösen können, indem wir unser Bewusstsein verändern, indem wir uns mit unserer eigenen Spiritualität auch wieder verbinden und indem wir auch dieses göttliche Bewusstsein in uns selbst wiedererwecken. Und es geht um Liebe, es geht um Beziehung, es geht um die Beziehung zu uns selbst, wie wir selber in mehr Selbstliebe kommen können und ja, wie wir wirklich als Gesellschaft all diese riesigen Probleme, diese riesigen Themen, die wir gerade alle auf dem Tisch liegen haben, wie wir sie als Gesellschaft verändern können und wie wir als Zivilisation anfangen können, wirklich mal eine Zivilisation zu werden im Sinne von in Mitgefühl miteinander zu sein, in Liebe miteinander zu sein, in Verbindung miteinander zu sein. Und ja, ich wünschte, dieses Gespräch könnte die ganze Welt hören. Und ja, es ist einfach so viel Wahrheit da drin, so viel Liebe. Und ich hoffe, dass du auch ganz, ganz viel für dich daraus mitnehmen kannst. Ich freue mich natürlich sehr, wenn du es teilst, wenn du es mit in die Welt hinausträgst. Und das Interview ist auf Englisch. Du findest aber wie immer natürlich auf YouTube und auf meiner Webseite die deutsche Übersetzung. Das heißt, du kannst es dir gerne im Video ansehen und die Untertitel anmachen, damit du die deutsche Übersetzung mitlesen kannst. Ansonsten ist Neil aber auch unglaublich gut zu verstehen. Und ich wünsche dir viel, viel Freude mit diesem Gespräch. Ich hoffe, dass du ganz viel für dich mitnehmen kannst. Und ja, jetzt geht's los mit Neil Donald Walsh. I am so happy, grateful and excited to talk to you today again. And last time we talked, I think I told you already that your book, The Conversations with God, was about 10 years ago, like my entrance into my own spirituality. And the book came so often across my way, and it took me 5 years to actually read it. And then I read it and it changed everything. So thank you for that. And let's just get into the conversation. And how are you today? I think it's morning for you right now, or what time is it where you are?
Yes. It's the middle of the morning. It's 10 a.m. and it's lovely to be here with you. Thank you for the opportunity.
Yeah, I thank you. So how does Neil Donald Walsh start into his day? Do you have any kind of connecting with the divine, or do you just start into it? Do you have something like a morning ritual?
I do not have a morning ritual that I do every day, but I would say that most mornings, not as a ritual, but just as a work routine, I do my writing. And I'm almost always writing something, either an article for a magazine or an interview that someone wants to do in writing, or something for one of my my own online websites, of which there are three, or maybe it's a contribution to Facebook. So In my life, writing something is what's happening almost every day. And I do that first thing in the morning. Now, I bring it up because for me, the writing that I do, especially when I'm answering people's questions about spirituality and how to apply the messages of conversations with God in their life, that writing is almost like a meditation. It feels like an opportunity for me to connect again with the aspect of divinity that resides within all of us. And so that, I would say, is kind of like my morning meditation. I'm cheating a little because it really isn't a meditation. But, you know, meditation takes many forms. One can be meditating washing the dishes. One can be meditating taking a shower. One can be meditating simply walking in the forest, or sitting down quietly at a keyboard and answering questions about God. So there are many, many ways to meditate. There's no right way or wrong way. But I don't have a morning spiritual routine, but I do have a morning activity that it very much involves my sense of connection with the divine.
That's beautiful. Thank you.
It's a much longer answer than you my 15-minute answer to your 30-second question.
No, but we are here for you, and I love to just listen. So please take as long as you want to answer every question. So
thank you.
I was thinking about talking to you today, and I have so many questions, so I try to figure out like the most important ones. And one question before we will talk about your new book, the God Solution, is I have the feeling that many people want to connect to the divine and to God, but it's really difficult to know whether it's God talking within in them, or the ego, or a part maybe where they're not sure where it's coming from. So the question is, how do I know when I connect to God or to the divine that it is actually God or the divine that I'm talking to or that is answering?
Well, I can't offer an answer that's true for everybody, because there's no way for me to get inside of everybody's personal experience. But I can tell you what it's like for me. For me, it's a feeling. It's a very particular kind of feeling that feels joyful, in some cases almost tearful, but, you know, not tears of sadness, of course, but, you know, kind of like tears of joy. When you're so happy, you start to have, you know, tears in your eyes. It's a feeling of oneness. But it's also a feeling of freedom and of excitement and of joyfulness. You know, God to me is that which is free and joyful and unlimited. So if the answers that I'm receiving in my connection with God, when I have my conversations with God, if the answers are almost too good to be true, then I know it's God. Because those are the kinds of answers I always get from the divine. And I ask God about that. I said, you know, this is almost too good to be true, these answers that I get from you. And she said, Neil, if God can't be too good to be true, who can? So I let myself accept that. I let myself accept the best answer, the most wonderful answer that I could possibly receive. And I make sure I don't dismiss the really good answers because they're too good to be true. I do exactly the opposite. If it's too good to be true, then I know it's probably true, because that's how God talks to all of us. God talks to all of us in terms that are too good to be true.
That is beautiful. Thank you. I think that is a good reminder then to know, this is the divine, this is too good to be true. That's a good mantra that one can repeat. Thank you. And you just published a new book. I think it's your 37th book you published.
Well, it's 39, but who's counting?
30, that's amazing. That's okay. Well, that is another topic, but I would really like to know how you're doing that. And in this new book, it's called The God Solution, and it's mainly about how a new definition, or maybe the true definition of who God is, and our understanding of who God is, and how we can actually be more loving, more kind, and live to our, this is how I understood it, live to humans' highest potential that is actually within us, but we don't connect to it because we don't believe in this too good to be true. What was your idea, or is it right how I understood the book, or how would you?
Well, yes, of course. Yes, you did understand the message. Let me share with you the reason that I wrote the book, you know, because why does one write 39 books?
Yeah.
I had really, honestly, no intention of writing yet another book. But I was looking at the world in this past year and past 18 months with all that's going on the planet. Some of those things are man-made, I mean, made by human beings, the challenges and problems that we have, and most of them are. And so I asked myself one day a question about a year ago or so. I asked myself, actually, it was in August of 2020. I asked myself, why is the world such a mess? If there really is a God, if we really have a divine being, why is the world so messed up? Why do we have the global virus, global economic downturn, if not collapse, racial injustice all over the planet, not just in the United States, anger between people, you know, and alienation, more alienation than I've ever seen in my life. And I'm an old person. I've never seen this kind of alienation. If you're not a member of our country, we want you to stay out. If you're not the right sex, you can't earn as much money. If you don't have the right sexual orientation, if you're gay or straight or gay or whatever, you know, all these different reasons that we find to separate ourselves, and not just separate ourselves, but alienate ourselves from each other. I couldn't understand. And I looked at it and I asked myself one morning when I woke up, why God, what, you know, if it really is a God, why aren't you doing something about it? And I began to write the question down, you know, as I am prone to do, I like to write. So I wrote the question down and I began to just, it wasn't a dialogue book. It wasn't a question and answer book like my 9 dialogue books, but it was just a straight narrative text in which I explored the question, what is the problem here? And I began to see that the problem is that human beings base their behaviors on the way they believe that the highest, most exalted being in the universe behaves, God. So human beings behave the way they think, the way they've been taught that God behaves. And how have we been taught that God behaves? Well, we've been told that God loves us. God loves us. But God's love is very conditional. Conditional. God says, I love you if you belong to the right religion, if you keep my commandments, if you do what I tell you to do and don't do what I'm telling you not to do. And if you do all those things, then I will love you. But if you don't do all those things, if you make any mistake, I'm going to have to judge you. I'm going to have to condemn you. And I'm going to have to punish you. So we believe in a God who is judging, condemning, and punishing. And we've decided that, well, that's good enough for us. I mean, God's behavior is good enough for our behavior. So we model our behavior on the God we've been taught about. And we are therefore loving each other conditionally. I love you if. And if any of us breaks any of the rules that the other one set, then we do judge and condemn and punish. And we punish each other brutally in many, many different ways. And that's been the history of humanity's behavior for many, many millennia, not just recently, but for thousands of years. So I began to look closely at that. I thought, what if we changed our idea about God? Wouldn't it be interesting if our definition of God happens to be inaccurate, happens to be a mistake? Maybe it's not true. Maybe God is not conditionally loving. Maybe God is not judging. Maybe God is not condemning and not punishing. Wouldn't it be interesting if we've got it all wrong? What if God simply could be defined or redefined with a brand new idea? And so I came up with two words in English that I believe define God: pure love. And so I began to write about that, and I found myself writing an entire book about what would happen if humanity redefined God, came up with a theologically revolutionary definition of God. Now, when I've talked about this to some people, they've said to me, oh, Neil, there's nothing revolutionary about that. That's not a new idea. We know that God is love. I mean, that's one thing most people can agree on: God is love. I said, wait a minute. I didn't say God is love. I said God is pure love. Well, people say, what's the difference? I said, oh, there's a huge difference. Pure love needs, wants, requests, and demands nothing in return. Nothing in return. I give you my love. And it's not a quid pro quo, as we say in Latin. It's not a this for that. It's not a trade, you know, trade deal, like countries have trade deals with each other. This is not a trade deal. God doesn't say, I will trade you my love if you behave in the right way. God says, I give you my love no matter how you behave, because I understand that humanity is a very young, I almost want to say primitive, species. Any species that acts the way we act has to be very primitive. I mean, we actually kill each other in order to teach each other that's not okay to kill each other. I don't know whether you all heard that. Let me say it again. We are so primitive as a species that we actually kill people to teach people that killing people is not okay.
Yeah, it's so hard.
Einstein said, you can't solve any problem using the same energy that created it. But we continue to do that. We try to end anger with anger, bring an end to violence with more violence, bring an end to killing with more killing. We keep on trying to use the same energy that created the problem in order to solve the problem. What if we decided to do something spiritually revolutionary? What if we decided to totally redefine God? What would happen is that we would come up with something that finally all the world's religions could agree with. You know, I don't know whether people know it or not, but there are 4,300 religions in the world today, just under 4,300 religions. Organized religions that we all know about in the world today. And they can't agree on simple ideas. There are 4,000 religions, but none of them can agree on who is God, what is God, what does God want, what does God demand, and how can we use this so-called higher power. This is a fascinating statistic. Here's another fascinating statistic, Laura. It's interesting to notice that surveys have been taken in countries all over the world, all over the planet. sociologists have taken the same survey asking the same question. 8 out of 10 people believe in some sort of higher power, what they call a controlling power. So 8 out of 10 of us, 80% of humanity, understands that there's something going on here. There's a higher power, but we can't agree on what the higher power is, much less how to use it. That's a sign of a very primitive kindergarten species, very young, just beginning to learn the basics of how life really works. The God Solution is a book that I wound up writing. I didn't think I'd be writing a book, but it wound up being a book length. It's a very thin book, very short book. But I sent it to a publisher and they said, we have to publish this immediately because it's directing humanity in a whole new way, how to deal with all that's going on the planet right now. And we call it the God Solution. Let's decide a new idea about God is true, and let's learn how to really use the higher power to change humanity's experience of itself.
That's so beautiful. So first of all, thank you for having this idea and for creating this new notion about God, because in the book you also write that the church, it took, I think, like 357 years to know that Galileo was actually right, that the earth.
Yeah, we talk in the book about idea heroes.
Yeah.
It takes an idea hero to advance a new definition of God. Yeah. And all of us, the book invites every human being to become an idea hero. And you're right. I used the example of Galileo was an idea hero. Galileo said that the earth revolved around the sun. Well, of course, at that time, the Catholic Church taught that the sun revolved around the earth. The earth was the center of the universe. We are the center of the universe. And when Galileo said that, no, it's not true, my observations, I've done some scientific observations, and it's the other way around, the church excommunicated him, and he died, you know, in under house arrest, because he refused to recant, to take back his statement. And as you said, 350 years later, the church said, well, okay, all right, Galileo was right. I mean, all right, the earth revolves around the sun. The church was wrong. And they lifted the excommunication and presumably allowed Galileo to go to heaven after all. Assuming that God, you know, was punishing Galileo all that time, 350 years in hell, because the church excommunicated him. You know, but we've needed idea heroes all throughout human history. Yeah. You know, Dr. Semmelweis in Hungary, he said just a few years ago, I mean, not recently, but 50 or 60 or 70 years ago, he said, there are things called germs, and we really should wash our hands between surgical procedures, because doctors in those days were going directly from the morgue to the birthing room and birthing babies. And we couldn't understand, Dr. Semmelweis couldn't understand why there was such a high mortality rate, why so many babies were dying right after birth. And he finally figured out, we should maybe sterilize our hands, do you think, between procedures. And they drummed him out of the medical profession, telling him he was crazy. But of course, he wasn't crazy. He was another idea hero. So idea heroes are people who advance a thought that we know beforehand everybody's going to disagree with, but we stick with the idea anyway, because ultimately it changes everything.
Yes. So let's talk about the idea that God is pure love. And the last time we talked, I asked you, who's God? And you said, what is God not? Like, God is everything. So we can probably then say that everything that exists is sort of an expression of pure love. And what I am thinking about looking at humanity right now, and you described it in the beginning, that the world is a mess right now. We have the climate crisis, we have the racial problems, we have so much hate, so much fear. I mean, I don't know how it's in the States right now, but where I live in Germany, you can tell people are full of fear, and they express it in really strange ways and fight against each other. So how, to make it really practical, how can we connect to that pure love? Because I mean, also in day-to-day life, in relationships, I have so many moments where I think, okay, I know I should react in love right now, but I do
not
something.
Not I should react in love. See, there are no shoulds in the universe. So it's not, I know I should react in pure love. No. If you're doing it because you think you should do it, then you're doing it for all the wrong reason. And that's why it's hard to do. It's always hard to do something that we think we should do, because human beings don't like to be told what they should be doing. So we generally find it very difficult, very challenging to do things that we think we should do. Mm-hmm. We want to do things that we enjoy doing, that we can't wait to do, that we love to do. So what do we love to do most? Love. The thing we love to do most is to love. But the problem is that if we love, we have this idea, we have this interesting idea that if we love too much, without condition, without needing anything back, love is a trade deal. It's like nations have trade deals. I trade you this, you trade me that. So we think of love as a trade deal. And we're afraid that if we love too much, we won't get enough back. And then we're going to be on the losing end of love. Mm. And so in America, we have a brand new Valentine's Day card. On Valentine's Day card in America, we send each other cards that say, "My darling, it's Valentine's Day, and I want you to know that I trade you very much. I will never stop trading you. I will trade you until the end of time. But if you stop trading me, if you don't give me what you're supposed to give, if you don't give me what you should give me, then I'm not going to give you what I should give you. And the deal is off." But that's not love. That's not how we love purely. You want to know how you love purely? Watch somebody around a horse that they love on their horse farm, or around a dog or a kitten that they love in their own house. You want to know what pure love looks like? Watch somebody with a baby in their arms. You don't say to a 3-month-old baby, "I love you, but you better give me what I need."
It's true.
Because we don't need anything from a 3-month-old baby. And we don't need anything from each other either. We just think that we do. So when humanity changes its idea about itself, that's when we will finally grow up as a species.
Yeah, that's beautiful. I just gave birth to my daughter 6 weeks ago. So I really have this feeling right now when I hold her in my arms that of course it's like this purely unconditional love that there is. And
you know, we have an idea when we're with another human being that we deeply love, when we have an intimate relationship, we often call them my baby. So we say, "Hey baby, how you doing today?" We call each other baby because it connects us with how we would really like to love if we hadn't been taught the other way.
How do we get rid of what we have been taught? Like how to really make it practical in day-to-day life? If I know now, okay, God is pure love, and I feel in my heart it's true, But there is also a part, I think, in most people that is somehow defensive or somehow is fearful. And there's
that's what I've been talking about. That's exactly right.
How do we get out of this
mindset?
How
we get out of the mindset by first of all noticing that it's not working. That's number one. It's not working.
Yes.
The divorce rate in the world is higher than it ever was before in the history of mankind, among other things. It's not working between couples. It's not working between peoples. It's not working between nations. It's simply not working. Conditional love never works. So the first step is we notice, oh, it doesn't work. It doesn't work. Then the second step is to decide who we are and why we're here on the planet. The most important question that human beings could ever ask themselves, and most human beings go through their entire life and never ask the question, who am I? I mean, really, who am I? And why am I here? Oh, I see. I have a choice. I can either think of myself as a physical entity, like a bird in the sky or a fish in the sea, maybe more complex, maybe more sophisticated, but I'm basically a physical entity, a physical life form. You know, I'm born, I live, I die, that's it. Or our second choice, we could decide, I'm a spiritual being. I'm a spiritual being. I'm not this. I'm not this body. I'm not even this mind. This body and this mind are pieces of equipment that who I really am uses to complete its agenda. Who I really am is a spiritual being. Now, if we decide that we're a spiritual being, then the question becomes, what are we doing here on the earth? Why would a spiritual being come to a place like this in order that we might experience who we really are, in order that we might express our true nature? And what is our true nature? Is it possible that we are actually, every one of us, individuations of divinity? Singular expressions of God. Is that too much to think of? People who have thought that way have become what we call masters, avatars. We even call one of them a savior because he said, God and I are one. I am the Son of God. He also said, why are you so amazed? These things that I do, you will do also. But we forgot about that. We erased that. He didn't say that. So what we discover is that when we understand who we really are, singularizations of the singularity, an individuation of divinity itself, then we know why we came here. We came here to the physical world in order to express that, to experience that, and to expand in our expression of that. We call that process, by the way, evolution. It is by this process that civilizations all across the universe evolve. So we've come here in order to evolve as spiritual beings. Now, what does this have to do with the question you asked me? Well, if we understand what our purpose in life is, then it becomes easy to stop loving as if it were a trade deal. It becomes easy to say to our beloved other person, and to all other people for that matter, what God says to us. And what does God say to us? My will for you is your will for you. And your will for you is my will for you. In other words, I want what you want. And I won't stop you from getting, doing, being, or having what you want. Because I love you and I want you to have what you want. And that's how you will grow. Sooner or later, you'll stop wanting certain things. Sooner or later, in your evolution as a species, you will learn. You will come to discover that the things you thought were important are really not important at all, that you've been going after the wrong objective. And so you will change your behavior and you'll start loving each other unconditionally, just the same way that God loves you. That becomes the question. Can we be idea heroes in our relationship? Can we be an idea hero when our personal relationship invites us not to do what we should do, but to do what we joyfully choose to do, because nothing makes us happier than expressing who we really are.
It's beautiful. It's a beautiful vision. And when you were talking, I was thinking that it starts within everyone, right? So I think many people have a huge problem loving themselves, as they think that they are not lovable or not enough or not good enough. What would you say as what can we do as an inner dialogue, maybe, or as an inner, let's call it the school of love in your inside, to start loving yourself with this pure love, to really letting go of all these thoughts of not being lovable, good enough, or all these things people walk around with in their heads or hearts, which actually makes them then hurt other people as well, because they cannot really connect within themselves with that love. How can someone who's very hard to themselves, inside of themselves, connect to that idea of being pure love themselves?
I think we have to let go of what we've been taught. We have to do something that's very difficult and very challenging. We have to make our culture wrong. Mm-hmm. We have to make our society wrong. In some cases, we may even have to make our own family wrong, our own parents wrong, in certain ways.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We may have had wonderful parents and a wonderful family, but it's our family, it's our culture that has taught us you're not good enough unless you obey the rules. You have to do what I tell you to do, or you're not going to get my love. I love you conditionally. And so where did we get the idea that we're not good enough? You know, I went to a Catholic church as a child. At the age of 7 years old, I was taught in school that I was born in original sin. That when I was born, when I was you just had a baby, your baby is a sinner. Your baby is a sinner born in original sin. And that baby has to spend the rest of its life trying to work off the karma of that original sin that it inherited from Adam and Eve, and all the crazy stories we tell each other. All the crazy stories that we share with each other, and we call it God's law. We even call it God's love. This is how God loves us, by setting up a system of justice that says if you don't belong to the right religion, it doesn't matter. I was told when I was 9 years old, you know, it doesn't matter how nice you are, how compassionate you are, how caring you are, how generous you are, how forgiving you are. It doesn't matter. You could be the nicest person in the world, but, you know, you joined the wrong religion. What can I tell you? You're a wonderful person, but you're going to hell because you didn't belong to the right religion. Because there's only one right religion. And of course, every one of the 4,000 religions says that their religion is the right,
the right
religion.
Yeah.
And we don't even see our own insanity. You know what insanity is? The definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over again, expecting to get a different result.
Yeah.
That's insanity. And that's what we're doing. So the God Solution is a book that begs humanity to end its insanity. It's my little poem for the day. Beg humanity to end its insanity.
Yeah. Yeah.
So how can we begin to love ourselves? By remembering what God told us in conversations with God. I'll never forget the message that I received from the divine. You know what she said? He said, if you saw you the way I see you, you would smile a lot.
Mm. That's beautiful.
Because God understands. We're the children of the universe. We're just now coming to a level of awareness where these ideas that I'm sharing with you will not be rejected completely out of hand. People are just now becoming mature enough as a species to say, wait a minute, maybe there's something to this. You know, this does seem to be a little crazy, a little insane to think of each other in the way we do because of the way we think of how God thinks of us. And so we have heads of state, I mean, presidents of countries belittling each other on international television or on the internet. Our missiles are bigger than your missiles. You better watch out.
Yeah.
Acting like 4-year-old children. And we call this civilization? We imagine that we are a civilized species? Wow. We haven't even begun to be truly civilized. But the opportunity lies before us. All we have to do is embrace the God Solution. Mm. And that's what the book, The God Solution, is all about. It offers an opportunity for all of us to become idea heroes. Do we dare to believe in a God and in a world that could be created if we chose to believe that God and we are pure love? We can show pure love not just to our dog. We can show pure love not just to the horse. We can show pure love not just to the baby in our arms. We can show pure love to each other. Only when we realize we have nothing to lose when we do so. And we could only believe that when we understand that we are not physical entities, simply physical beings. We are spiritual beings having a physical experience for the purpose of expressing and demonstrating who we really are. I could be wrong about all of this. But if you know a better way to live, I'm all ears.
I don't. I think it's the most, the purest expression of how we can be. And just when you were talking, I realized that actually we lose everything if we don't live by that. I mean, we are so afraid to lose when we love, but actually we lose everything when we don't love, or when we don't really love purely. Yeah, we love, but then we lose relationships. We actually lose life, sort of. Yeah, the experience of life. I have one question because I think people need a picture to walk to, sort of a vision. If you say, and I absolutely agree that our civilization is not very much, how do you say it, civilized? let's say we start living, let's say all these people listening right now, all these millions of people listening right now connect to this idea of pure love and starting living by it. And then there is like a ripple effect and more people start living by it. What is the picture you see inside of yourself as a vision when you talk about the concept of pure love? What is your vision of humanity, of the species we are? How could we actually live with each other? Which possibilities are there that will we be able to experience when we start living by that concept, by that idea?
We would never again live on a planet where 1.5 billion people have never had one drop, not one drop of clean water in their entire lives. We would never again live on a planet where 653 children die of starvation every hour. Because we can't figure out how to get food to them. We would never again live on a planet where 2.1 billion people don't have indoor plumbing and need to relieve themselves outside. That's one quarter of the human race. We would never again live on a planet where over 2 billion people don't even have electricity. Are you listening to me? In the year 2021, 2 billion people still don't have electricity. They're living by candlelight. We would never again have the kind of planet that we have now, much less the kinds of relationships that we have now. We would live in an entirely different way. Our society would be dramatically altered. Our way of doing business, you know, our economy would be totally different. Our politics would be totally different. Our social constructions would be totally different. And our spiritual dogmas would be totally different. Everything would be transformed in such a way that suffering at the hands of each other would disappear from the face of the earth. There would still be earthquakes, fair enough. There would still be tornadoes, fair enough. There might even be an asteroid, a comet that might strike the earth, fair enough. But at least we would stop being inhumane to each other. We would end a system where 37 people own or control more wealth than one half of the human race combined. And we call that okay. We say, well, that's the way it is. That's the way it is. Really? While people are starving to death? While 653 children are dying of starvation every hour? Sooner or later, we would see the obscenity of all of that. We would say, no, surely we can do better than this. surely we can do better than this. What would it take for us to elevate our collective experience? Ah, pure love. I could be wrong. What do I know? I could be all wrong about all of this. But I don't think so.
I don't think so either. Where do we start?
We start with each other in a one-on-one exchange. I have a tool that I offer people to use in their life. The first time you see any other human being on any particular day, maybe it's the person across the pillow, and the first time you see that person, or maybe it's the person across the house, the first time you see that person that day, or maybe it's the person across the street, the first time you see that neighbor that day, or maybe it's the person across town, the first time you see that person that day. Or maybe it's the person across the world whose picture you see on the internet, on your computer, the first time that day. The first time each day that you enter someone's life, use this tool. Say this to yourself in your mind. Don't say it out loud. Do not say it out loud, because people will not understand. And they might even become angry. But say it in your mind. The first time you see that person that day, say this to yourself. I have come that you may have life, and that you may have it more abundantly. Your life will be made better today for my having passed through it. I promise you.
That's beautiful.
If you say that to yourself in your mind, the first time you see that person that day, and do it every day, for the rest of your life, that simple tool can change your life overnight.
Thank you.
But be careful. Be careful. This is dangerous. You might wind up being one of those idea heroes who changes the world.
This is something I do when I'm driving in my car, or when I'm not driving, but I'm sitting in the driver's seat or something, and I'm just in the traffic. And then I always imagine how I just, with my hands, I do like this sometimes. And I just imagine how I just send like love to the people around me that are sitting in the bus around me. And I just think that maybe they feel like this little tickling in their heart, and somehow it arrives them. And sometimes just like for an hour, just in my car, sending like to everyone in the traffic love, and then it just feels so good. it's just a joyful thing to do. So maybe, yeah, it's actually, I think, something similar to what you just shared. It's a beautiful tool. I really love it. So I have one last question. I asked it before, but gratefully, you hopefully don't remember the question. So we get a new or different answer. Maybe it's the same. I don't know. So the question is, imagine it's the last time of your life. So you will grow way, way, way older. And there will be the last day of your life. And there has been a technical problem and everything has been deleted. So your books have been deleted. Your website is deleted. Everything is gone. And I would come to you and I would say, Neil, I'm really sorry. There has been a technical problem. Everything has been deleted. But good news is I have a white sheet of paper and a pen. And you can write on this white sheet of paper three wisdoms. If this is all you could leave in the world, you could write three wisdoms on this white paper that you would like humanity to remember, what would you write down?
Number one, your life has nothing to do with you. It's about everyone whose life you touch and the way in which you touch it. Number two, there is no such thing as separation. You are not separate from any other human being, nor are you separate from any other aspect of life. You're not separate from the trees outside, from the planet on which you live. We are all one. All things are one thing. And one thing is the only thing there is. And number three, you and God are one. That you are an individuation of divinity. That you're going home to God when this particular physical incarnation is over. And you may return again to this physical life here or in any other place in the universe that you wish, in a continuing evolutionary process that allows you to experience the wonder of who you are. Now, therefore, move on with your life and give people back to themselves.
Thank you. And as the final question, in which way can we, my community or I, how can we serve you? What is something, because you give so much, you wrote so many books, you share all this wisdom. Is there anything that we can do for you? Is there anything that you would like us to do? Or what would you say is maybe the first book people could start reading from you, The God Solution or Conversations with God? Or what can we do for you?
Nothing. I don't need anything. I don't desire anything. I don't want anything from you. The question is not, what can you do for me? The question is, what can you do for yourself? When you answer that question, you will have done something for me, because you will have turned the question back to where it really belongs. What can you do for you? And the answer is to embrace and accept the reality of who you really are, and then to demonstrate that you are pure love in everything that you think and say and do, with every person whose life you touch throughout the days and times of your life. Do that. Do these things in remembrance of what I shared with you here.
Thank you. And yes, I just really want to acknowledge you for just the person you are. And I'm so grateful that you wrote Conversations with God. I think this is, if there's one book I could choose where I would hope every human being would read it, it's that book. And I read many books. So this is really the book I would say that I hope that somehow it will fall into every human being's hands and will be read all over the world. So
let me share with you that you said that I wrote a book that I wrote. I didn't have the experience that I wrote that book. Mm-hmm. I had the experience that I took dictation. But it doesn't feel like a book that I wrote. Mm-hmm. It feels like a book I was given. Like when a person dictates something to someone else. And I took dictation as fast as I could, writing it down as fast as I could, and asking questions of the person who was giving me these messages, and then sharing the messages with the world. Because I was told in the messages, you will make of this one day a book, and it will be accessed by many people. And I said, okay. I will pass it on. So it doesn't feel like a book that I wrote, but a book that I was given, which is true of all the 9 dialogue books that I was given. And so I would invite people to, if they choose, read the books and see what they think. But don't believe a word in them. The books themselves say, don't believe anything you find here. Simply use it as a point of departure as you start on your own journey to discover and to create, to live and to experience your own innermost truth. Be your own authority in all spiritual matters. That's the invitation of Conversations with God.
Thank you. I think that's a beautiful, beautiful ending for everyone to take from here. Nir, really from the bottom of my heart, just thank you. It's always the greatest pleasure for me to talk to you, and I'm very, very deeply touched, and I just wish you the best of everything that comes along your way, and a beautiful day today, and just thank you. Just thank you.
Thank you for the opportunity and for the invitation to share these ideas with those people whose lives you touch. And thank you for touching so many lives in the way that you do. So I return the thanks, and we have an opportunity to experience that we are both traveling the same path on the same journey in very much the same ways, sending messages to those whose lives we touch and whose lives we think could be made better from the messages themselves. So thank you.
Thank you.
Ich hoffe, dass du ganz viel aus diesem Gespräch für dich mitnehmen konntest und genauso beseelt bist, wie ich es bin. Und ja, so diese Wärme um dein Herz gerade spüren kannst, die von Nir Donald Walsh einfach ausgeht. Diese bedingungslose, pure Liebe. Und ich freue mich riesig, wenn du bei mir bei Instagram vorbeischaust, @LauraMarlinaSeiler, und gerne unter den Post von heute deine Gedanken dalässt zu der Folge. Was hast du für dich mitgenommen? Und natürlich auch, wenn du diese Folge teilst. Und ich möchte an der Stelle auch nochmal Danke sagen für die unglaublich wunderschönen Rezensionen, die ihr schreibt für den Podcast. Und ich möchte gerne eine vorlesen und teilen, die ich mir hier gerade rausgepickt habe, quasi von Trommler90. Und ich weiß nicht, ob es ein er oder eine sie ist, aber sie schreibt: Liebe Laura, es sind so viele Morgen, die ich mittlerweile gemeinsam mit deiner geführten Meditation starte, und davon bin ich dir von ganzem Herzen dankbar. Deine Stimme, deine Worte, die du wählst, und die leichten, wertvollen Bilder, die du aufmachst. Du eröffnest mir durch die Meditation neue Türen und neue Dimensionen. Das schätze ich so sehr an dir. Danke, dass es dich gibt. Rock on und Namaste. Vielen, vielen Dank. Das freut mich so sehr, und danke für diese wunderschöne Rezension. Und ich freue mich natürlich auch, wenn du dir die Zeit nimmst und dem Podcast ein bisschen Liebe dalässt und auf YouTube oder auch auf iTunes eine Rezension schreibst, eine Bewertung dalässt in den Kommentaren. Danke dafür, und ich wünsche dir jetzt einen wunderschönen Tag. Und wenn du möchtest, schau gerne bei mir auf der Webseite vorbei, @LauraMarlinaSeiler. Wir werden jetzt wieder mit dem Vergebungskurs starten, und das wird auch so schön. Also wenn du da gerne dabei sein möchtest, schau auch gerne bei mir vorbei. Den Link findest du natürlich in den Shownotes. Und ja, das war's erstmal von meiner Seite. Rock on und Namaste, deine Laura.